And we're talking Buccaneers. New uniforms, they hope new era, perhaps new quarterback more than anything else. Jenna Lane, our NFL Nation Buccaneers reporter, joins us right now. Protection for Tom Brady. How big of a priority, Jenna, is that in this Buccaneer draft?
Well, since we're talking about all these new things, I'd be remiss if I did not mention how much I appreciate the old school nod to Pearl Jam, Even Flow, with that bumper music. Fantastic. I mean, that just made my day right there. Oh, my gosh. That was wonderful. But, yeah, you're right. Protection for Tom Brady, soon-to-be 43-year-old quarterback, is just absolutely paramount for the Bucs. They didn't re-sign their longtime starting right tackle, Damar Dotson. They were able to bring in a free agent, Joe Haig, in that role, but I think they could use an upgrade, and they certainly could do that in this draft. If any of those top four, seems like there's a consensus top four, if any of those guys were available to them at number 14, that'd be huge. You know, Tristan Wirfs, Jedrick Willis, Andrew Thomas, or Mekhi Becton, they all love those guys.
Let me assume, Jenna, that they get the tackle. Okay, they get the tackle. Where's the point of emphasis in round two through round four? Do they stay on the offensive side with a running back, maybe a third receiver? When do they shift to the defensive side of the ball after round one?
Well, you know, I think that they are going to go offense because, you know, a big point of their offseason was re-signing some of their defensive guys. You know, getting Shaq Barrett back on a franchise tag was big, getting Ndamukong Suh, getting Jason Pierre-Paul back. That was big for them. But you're right, though. Offensively, they do have some areas they need to address. You know, I think that they really need a pass-catching running back, and Bruce Arians talked about that with us a little bit a couple weeks ago. And they have some options there in that second round. You know, if I know there's been some talk about, you know, Jonathan Taylor, if he's available, because there were concerns about, you know, possibly having a little too much tread, the number of snaps he had at Wisconsin. He has a fumbling issue. So he drops to them in round two. They would love that. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a guy you've heard a lot about as well from LSU, he's a guy that I think they could definitely be looking at. And, in fact, I've heard they've talked to both of those guys quite a bit there. So I also think they really need to get some speed at wide receiver, because Rashad Perryman left in free agency. They've got Mike Evans. They've got Chris Godwin, two guys that are great when it comes to physicality, competing for the ball. But they need something to really take the top off the defense. And in this draft, they do have some options there as well, because it is such a deep class at wide receiver.
Jenna Lane, NFL Nation Buccaneers reporter and fan of Eddie Vedder, hanging out with us here, NFL Nation Takeover Weekend, cruising along. I know he's no longer a Buccaneer, but everybody still wants to know, what's happening with Jameis? I know you're still dialed into him. What is the latest?
Well, you know, he's still kind of weighing his options, and he's still working out very hard. He just got married to his longtime sweetheart, Breonna Allen. They didn't quite have the wedding that they envisioned. They had to postpone their actual wedding, as many couples have had, because of COVID-19. But they had a ceremony at their home, a private ceremony, and which I thought was really cool, because as you guys know, when you've got a special lady in your life and she's down, and I know Breonna was certainly down about it, Jameis kind of swooped in and saved the day, and it looked like it was a really beautiful ceremony. I heard it was, but they're still planning to do something with their families. But, you know, he's continuing to train quite a bit with his longtime trainer, Otis Leverett, who he's worked with since he was 14 years old. You know, he actually has been posting some videos on social media as well. Looks like he's dropped some weight. A lot of people have asked me, well, why didn't he do that when he was with the Bucs? Well, if you remember, he actually tried to gain some weight because he knew he was going to be taking some more hits with Bruce Arians, knew that in that offense they weren't going to be utilizing Mass Protect the way they did with Dirk Cutter. So he felt like he needed to kind of, you know, put some armor on himself to kind of protect himself from some of those hits. Now he's getting back to what he does best, which is, and I know his athleticism hasn't always been something that people would necessarily point to when they think about his game, but he's a guy that's elusive outside the pocket. He can certainly scramble and get some important yards. And I think that, you know, he's trying to do that. I think he's trying to show people, you know, hey, I'm still an athlete. And by the looks of things, he's looking pretty good. So he's working hard. He's just trying to wait for the right opportunity. And I also think this is about resetting his expectations, because if you remember going into the offseason, the asking price was $30 million, which is the going rate for a young, talented quarterback. Too many teams were afraid, though, because of those interceptions. Now he's got to try to find the right fit for him. And I think teams are also wondering, too, okay, what's the dynamic going to be like when we bring this guy in? Because he is definitely a capable starter. But how does it impact the guy that we already have as QB1, right? You don't want to bring a guy in there that's going to shake things up too much if that's really not part of your long-term plan.
Fair enough. Good stuff. That's cool. I did not realize that he got married. So he saved the day in a difficult time. Well done. Jenna, enjoy the draft. We look forward to seeing what this club does.
You guys as well. And you know what? That has inspired me now. I've got to do some more draft prep and some more cleaning because my place is a mess right now. I don't know how you guys' places are holding up. Mine's been a mess, especially since we've had to configure these home studios. So I'm going to listen to some Pearl Jam, maybe some Nirvana as well. Get some 90s grunge going in my place to really liven things up. It's quite dreary outside, so that'll be perfect. It really set the mood nicely for the weekend.
Well, if you get tired of Pearl Jam, you can always listen to a little Dorian Mel on ESPN Radio as well, Jenna.
Oh, I like that too, and you know I will.
Yeah. Let's go to David Newton, NFL Nation Panthers reporter, and discuss. This is a franchise that just made some heck of a statement by making Christian McCaffrey the highest paid running back. And of course, they're quick to say to call him a running back is disrespectful to the things that Run CMC does. What is the statement ultimately, David, that they made with this deal?
Well, basically that they are, good morning, first of all, but basically the fact that they just want to build this team around him. He kind of personifies everything that Matt Rhule wants in a player, from Christian's work ethic to his ability to play multi-positions, because Matt Rhule always refers to that positionless player, which is a player not defined by one position, and that's Christian McCaffrey, and to what he does in the community and everything. I mean, this guy just personifies everything that Matt Rhule believes in for his process he wants to put in. And, you know, they're going to get Christian at his best. I mean, he's still a young guy. He hasn't turned 24 to June 7th. So I think it was a great deal for them. When you look at it, it really stretches out to a six-year deal where they're only averaging $12.5 million a year. So when you look at it that way, that's a real bargain.
David, when you look at all the moves, that's 14 new players brought in, including one from the XFL. A lot of players let go. I see some Temple guys. I see, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater leads the way with Robbie Anderson at wide receiver. With all the moves and all the losses, we know about defensive tackle. We've always had Derek Brown from Auburn going there. But what beyond defensive tackle are the pressing needs right now after free agency has been completed with the Carolina Panthers?
Well, you're right. Defensive tackle is the biggest need, and there's probably going to be a couple of good ones there when the Panthers draft at 7, and Derek Brown and even Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. So I suspect one of those will be available. Safety, I think they still need to strengthen there. They've got to have some depth on the offensive line. I mean, their left tackle, while they did bring in Okung in a trade, and they've got a little from last year that they brought in there. I think they want to strengthen that position, but they kind of put themselves in decent position through free agency where they don't have to go out and reach for one certain player. And as Matt Rhule said, there's nothing wrong with adding strength to a strength. So I think you'll probably see most of their effort in the draft go on defense, but I wouldn't rule out a quarterback at some point either. Especially, I would even rule out at number 7 if the right player fell there. I don't think that's going to happen. But again, as you mentioned, defensive tackle. If they can get a Derek Brown or a Kinlaw, I think that would be an ideal fit for them.
Talking Carolina Panthers, David Newton, NFL Nation Panthers reporter, Dorian Mel, ESPN Radio. Always brought to you, presented by Progressive Insurance. Stay in quarterback here for a moment. Obviously, they believe in Teddy Bridgewater. They did bring in P.J. Walker, who had a great stretch in the XFL with Houston. Maybe the best player in that league, you could argue there. They've got Will Greer. We know they released Kyle Allen. Cam Newton's gone as well. You say they could see them. So you could potentially, if the right guy is there at 7, not take Derek Brown and address that defense, but instead potentially a quarterback. Who would be the right guy to fall to them?
The one that intrigues me more than anybody there would be Tua, because they Tua's a guy that probably could use a year to continue to rehab, to learn and play behind somebody. I think Bridgewater is a guy that would be good for him to play behind. And again, you look at Bridgewater's deal, you know, the first 2 years that it's not as team or team friendly, but that third year they could probably move on from him if he doesn't prove to be the player they want him to be. I mean, I think Bridgewater is a solid player, Do I think he's a dynamic player like you had when you had Cam Newton, a guy that can, you know, be that long-term quarterback? I'm not sure about that, and I'm not sure the Panthers are sure of that. So if you had a guy like a Tua that you feel like is a generational-type player, it'd be hard to pass on him. I don't think he's going to be there, and I still think they're going to go with the defensive need. But he's the one that intrigues me more than anybody because I think he fits what Matt Rhule wants to do.
Now the only Newton associated with the Panthers. David, good stuff, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the draft, and good luck through this week.
I appreciate it. I think I want to change my Twitter handle to The Real Newton because last one standing here.
There is a team that you read and hear a lot about potentially moving up. One of them is the Atlanta Falcons. Vaughn McClure, NFL Nation Panthers reporter, joining us right now. Moving up for a cornerback, that's the thing you keep seeing, potentially Florida's C.J. Henderson, who is, you know, a lot of top two or three cornerbacks in this draft, depending upon who you ask. How likely is that, and how much will they have to move?
Well, I mean, I think that that's something that Dimitroff thinks about, Thomas Dimitroff thinks about every year. He thinks about trading. I mean, since he's been with the Falcons, he's completed 17 draft day trades, and five of those have been moving up or down in the first round. Of course, all of us think about the Julio Jones trade and how much they traded to get him with Cleveland. I don't know if they're going to make that kind of move right now, but yeah, I can see them maybe moving up from 16 and seeing if they can get a guy like a C.J. Henderson, maybe a Javon Kinlaw. I know fans would love them to get a Chase Young or Derrick Brown. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I can see them maybe moving up, maybe talking to Jacksonville, I think, at 9, because, you know, Dimitroff has a very good relationship with David Caldwell. Yeah, Caldwell worked for him in Atlanta. So we'll see how things pan out, but I can definitely see maybe an attempt to move up if they can't move up, if they don't stay at 16 and get the guy that they want.
A lot of first-round draft choices on this team, Vaughn. They brought in a lot. They let a couple go. But when you look at the needs of this team, we talk about cornerback, but is there a need, Vaughn, in your opinion, that people are kind of overlooking with the Falcons?
Well, I mean, I think you're always looking to improve the defensive line. There's no doubt about it, whether that be a guy in the middle to help push with Grady Jarrett or a guy off the edge. I mean, Mel, I like the guy that you picked in your last mock draft. Chaisson from LSU.
Yep.
I mean, he might be a guy, if they stay at 16, that they really look at and bring him in next to Dante Fowler as an edge rusher. So I think Dan Quinn, you know, he's a defensive line kind of guy. That's what his background is. He looks for guys to help up front. And in fact, Mel, when I talked to Arthur Blank at the end of the season, he said, you know what, we need guys that are going to affect the quarterback. And that's even more imperative now when you got Tom Brady in the division, you got Drew Brees, and even Teddy Bridgewater.
Chatting Falcons, Vaughn McClure, NFL Nation Falcons reporter. Why do they, and why are they, confident enough in Todd Gurley's dependability and health to bring him in from L.A.? I know the whole Georgia thing, and I realize that you can't lose when you're bringing in a bulldog to Atlanta. I understand that. But Gurley's been a mystery from a health perspective. Why do they believe he'll be fine?
Well, I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people say, you know, he might not be that same guy that he was in 2017, but he can still be effective. You know, one of the recurring themes that I keep hearing about him is that he can be a red zone threat. He can be a guy that scores touchdowns. He's still a big back. He's still got some of his speed. Now, I don't know if he's going to be that same guy. I don't know if he's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher or whatever, but they just need to find some way to have him be effective in this offense. Because remember, when you look at this offense, you got Matt Ryan, one-time MVP. You got Julio Jones, an all-decade receiver. You got Calvin Ridley, who I think is going to be a superstar in this league. You get this tight end, Hayden Hurst, who's got some untapped potential. So he doesn't have to be the guy in this offense. Mm-hmm. He really doesn't. So he just has to contribute. So if he can contribute and do some good things and they can get a little bit out of him while monitoring his reps and doing a little bit of load management, I think they'll be fine. But, again, he's still got to pass the physical guy.
So Vaughn, real quick. Exactly. With this team, this personnel base of this team, I thought back in August last year, I thought they'd be a playoff team. They were not. But they showed signs of being a team that could play with anybody when they're on their game, Vaughn. With the personnel additions they made and the draft coming up on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, assuming they do a good job, Thomas Dimitroff leading the way, what's your feeling about this Falcon team going into 2020?
Mel, I think it's still going to be tough for them to beat the Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that the Buccaneers have Brady. You know, they might be improved. They're probably going to be better than a 7-9 team. But you got to win some games to win the NFC South this year when you're talking about the quarterbacks and the players that they have in this division. So if I was looking at it right now, actually, I would say that they're third behind New Orleans and Tampa Bay. And maybe, you know, they're going to have to rely on their offense. They're going to have to score points. They're going to have to score points like they did when Kyle Shanahan was here when they led the league in scoring. So we'll see if they can get that done. But it's going to be a tough go in the division.
Vaughn McClure, NFL Nation, Atlanta Falcons reporter. Vaughn, great stuff, buddy. Thank you much. Enjoy the draft.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We talk Saints. Mike Triplett, NFL Nation, New Orleans Saints reporter, joins us now. Look, we're all going to remember the great season that they had. We are also going to remember the shocking loss in the playoffs after that 13-3 season. How much does that sit with them, and how much has it sat with them through the offseason and perhaps playing some sort of a factor in what they have been doing?
Well, it absolutely is weighing on them now. You know, they've won the most games in the regular season over the last 3 years now, without any Super Bowl berth to show for it. Three pretty crushing playoff losses in a row. You know, this team's kind of been in win now mode for a while. They're trying to maximize while they have this talent that they have. And no different this offseason. They continue to push some of the tough costs into the future. They signed Emmanuel Sanders in free agency, 33 years old, and Malcolm Jenkins in his 30s. Two guys who they think can be valuable pieces. Obviously, that's more win now thinking than long-term thinking. So, you know, that's the next step for this team. They've gone 13-3 2 years in a row. They want to get to the Super Bowl, especially since this could be Drew Brees' last crack at it.
Mike, the first-round pick at number 24, no two, and it's a pivotal choice. Give me one or two positions that pick should come from.
Yeah, Mel, I think what they did in free agency allowed them to really go best available player. If they had not signed a receiver, we'd be screaming. They have to draft a receiver. That's still probably one of the top priorities. They could add another one. But I think linebacker is number one for me. I think it's their biggest need, and I think both Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen make sense around pick number 24. And I think edge rusher I might rank next, but obviously we're going to talk about quarterback being a factor for this team.
Real quick, Michael, on that. Is Taysom Hill Sean Payton's heir apparent to Drew Brees?
I think they believe he genuinely can be. I don't think that would prevent them from drafting a quarterback if they loved one, though. So I guess the reverse of that is I don't think they're going to force themselves to draft a quarterback this year. Jordan Love would be the only one who makes sense in round one, but they're not going to force that pick because they do believe that if Drew Brees retired and they didn't draft one, that they'd be, you know, excited about going forward with Taysom Hill. There's a lot of question marks, including the injury possibility with him. But they genuinely believe that he could win games for them as their starter. So that's why they're not going to force drafting one.
Dari and Mel, ESPN Radio, always presented by Progressive Insurance, chatting with Mike Triplett, NFL Nation Saints reporter on this NFL Nation Takeover weekend. Mike mentioned Brees, of course, signs a 2-year deal. There are some people that you hear a lot of people say he'll probably just play one and pave the way for Hill or whoever. What will dictate whether Drew Brees plays one or both years of the contract?
Well, he has insisted that he's been taking this 1 year at a time. I think since he took so long to make his decision, and the fact that, you know, there's already reports of him lining up his post-career as a TV analyst, you know, I think everybody is operating with the belief that this will be the final one. It would sure be easier for him to walk away if they went to the Super Bowl and won one. I don't know what kind of a factor would play if this season is shortened, or, you know, all the question marks we have now with what's going to happen with this season. So, you know, I think this would be his 20th season. It'd be a nice round number. I think he's close to retiring, but I know that it would be easier for him to walk away if he can end on a winning note. It's been over 10 years now since his last Super Bowl.
Mike, real quick, with what Christian McCaffrey was able to get with the Carolina Panthers, yep, and Matt Rhule saying he's everything about our franchise, everything we believe in, he does. Do the Saints feel the same way about Alvin Kamara?
Yeah, you know, I wrote in depth about this right before McCaffrey signed his deal. It's so tough to gauge the running back market and what each running back means to each team. McCaffrey plays about 95% of the Panthers' snaps. Kamara plays a little under 70% of the Saints' snaps. But he is absolutely valuable to them, especially because he's been their number two receiver. 81 catches exactly in all three of his years. So figuring out the price, I think, is going to be very difficult. But his value is absolutely, you know, he's a guy the Saints do want to try to re-sign long-term.
That's Mike Triplett, Saints NFL Nation reporter. Mike, have a great weekend. Have some fun with the draft this week. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mike.